Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hush, Hush by Lucia Franco. Narrated by Elizabeth Hart. Chapter 1. Where are you coming from all dolled up like that? I rub my sleepy eyes, then reach under the throw pillow for my cell phone to check the time. It's 4:04 a.m. Shit, Aubrey, I'm sorry, my roommate says. I didn't mean to wake you up. Go back to sleep. The walls of our apartment are paper thin, making it almost impossible to get a good night's sleep. Then again, I'm used to it. It's not a big deal. I sit up and reach over to turn on the lamp on the end table. I must have fallen asleep on the couch. These shoes are killing my feet. Natalie plops down on the opposite end of the couch. Her head falls back, and she turns to look at me. I'm so worn out, she groans. I can't believe how late I got home. How the hell am I going to get up for class in the morning? I don't know why you always keep such an early schedule, I say, my voice groggy. You should see if you can change it up and take some night classes. Natalie carefully tugs off her fake eyelashes and drops them on the coffee table in front of us. You know I can't. I have to work. This is a usual thing for us. No, you don't. I don't even know why you do. Because I'm not going to be a little rich bitch and rely on my parents, only for them to get mad when I don't heal and take everything away. Fuck that. I chuckle. Today is the first day of our senior year at Fordham University in Manhattan, and not much has changed since we met as freshmen. I'm still a broke college student here on a full scholarship, and she still has tons of family money but refuses to use it. Being complete opposites, I didn't think we'd get along at first. She's Hollister, and I'm whatever's cute, straight off a Goodwill rack. I can get lost in the latest romance bestseller. Meanwhile, Natalie only reads anything with glossy pages and celebrity pictures. She's rap, and I'm pop. Carmine's Italian versus Chef Boyardee. The list is extensive, but our taste in guys and the lack of filter on our tongues were enough to make us click, and we've been best friends ever since. I guess I see your point. I didn't really. People with her mentality rile me up. Coming from nothing, and I mean dirt poor nothing, it's hard to process why anyone would want to struggle when they didn't have to. Still, I love her. Natalie turns and lies on her back. She places her head on my lap and looks up at the ceiling. Trust me, money doesn't make you happy, Ob. All it does is cause more problems, she says, her voice low, empty. I'd give anything to not have to worry about living expenses, or if I'll even have enough to get a few extra things from the grocery. My body can only take so much nasty, cheap soup and day-old coffee. You need a new job, she states. Another thing we do all the time. After fulfilling the first-year requirement of living in the dorms, Natalie immediately wanted to move out, and she'd wanted me to move with her. I didn't have the luxury of leaving since I couldn't afford to live on my own, and my scholarship included room and board on campus, but Natalie insisted I didn't have to pay and begged me to move with her. I didn't like taking handouts from anyone, so we'd made a deal. She covered moving expenses and rent, and with my small part-time job at the laundromat, I paid the utilities. After the second year, I had a handle on my studies and a second paying job. Not that I like it, though. I hate watching kids. Tell me about it, I say. Come Friday, I'll be stuck with the two little monsters all damn weekend while their parents take a vacation to Martha's Vineyard. I shouldn't complain, though. The money is good. She laughs as she removes her diamond hoops and places them next to her fake lashes. I don't know how you deal with crying kids after school and work. I'd rather strap a mattress to my back. I need that money, Nat. I don't have a choice. I wonder if I can give them NyQuil all weekend. I laugh when her eyes widen. I'm kidding. My parents had died in a four-car pileup on the Southern State Parkway on Long Island when I was 7, and my Grammy raised me and gave me what she could. which wasn't very much. I'd gotten a job at the local pool as a lifeguard as soon as I was old enough. Then during the winters, I worked as a hostess at an Italian restaurant. I even filled in as a dishwasher when they were short-staffed. Whatever money Grammy didn't need for bills, I socked away. But now those savings were gone. Living in the city isn't for the poor or the middle class, and I need to figure something out. Natalie sits up and pulls off her 5-inch Louboutins. The red-bottomed black lace-up pumps are sexy as hell. I want them, but I know I'll never be able to afford them. She drops the shoes to the overshined waxed wood floor like she's taking off work boots. I can't believe you walk around serving shots in those heels all night. Aren't you afraid you're going to ruin them? It has its rewards. One corner of her mouth pulls up as she reaches for her purse on the floor. Her hand disappears into her clutch. Then she takes out 3 stacks of hundreds banded together. She throws each one at me. My eyes widen as I catch them. Where did all this come from? Did you see your parents? Aubrey rolls her navy-colored eyes at me in obvious annoyance. That's a fuck no, Ob. That's a week of work. She points to the stacks of bills in my hands. Get the hell out of here. 1 week? This was more money than I made in a year. With 1 stack of these bills, I could get everything I desperately needed right now but couldn't afford. Why are you walking around with this much cash in New York City? Natalie walks to her room and returns with the familiar book. I hand her back the money after she sits next to me and flips open a weathered dictionary about 9 inches thick. The middle is cut out, leaving a big, empty square. She places the money inside, then closes it and stacks it in between the books on the coffee table. No one would guess it's a fake, and no one would think to pick it up. I came up with the idea when we'd wanted to hide something that held value in our dorm, and it's a tactic we've used ever since. Don't worry, no one knew. I carry a clutch for a reason. It's the perfect size to hide under my armpit. Once my coat is buttoned, no one can tell. What if you get mugged? She eyes me like I'm stupid. When? While I'm sitting in a cab? I know better than to walk these streets at night, Mom. Ever since I started the part-time nanny gig a year ago, her new thing is to call me Mom when I worry about something she does. The little monsters call me Mom, too, but that's a different story. You could have gotten a crazy cab driver, like in the movie The Bone Collector. I get cozy under my blanket, and Natalie climbs under it at the opposite end. Go straight to the bank. Don't leave that here. I'm going after my first class to put some away. It's not like I can deposit it all at once. The bank would make me fill out paperwork, then question where it came from. I have to deposit small chunks at a time. Interesting. I didn't know that. I check the time on my phone. My alarm will be going off in a couple of hours, a little earlier than normal. I need some extra time to get ready for the first day. When you're ready to quit changing shitty diapers and wiping snotty noses, let me know. There might be an opening coming up where I work. I giggle at her suggestion. I can't be a shot girl. For one, I can't afford to wear the clothes you do, you know that. And two, I'm not clumsy, but I know I would drop the tray on someone. I'd end up having to pay for it all, too. Natalie shifts on the couch. The money is so good, though. You just gotta leave your morals at the door. To serve shots? She's quiet for a long moment, and I think she's asleep until she says, when you're ready to make money, and I'm talking about money like what you saw tonight, money you could use to help Grammy out with, let me know. I eye the dictionary and think about the stacks of cash I'd held. After all my necessary expenses for the month are paid, I deposit whatever money I have left into Grammy's bank account. Even though I'm struggling, my Grammy lives on Social Security and needs the money more than I do. The winters have been brutal the last few years, and if my little scraps of cash help pay her heating bill, then I could do without. As sleep overtakes me, I think about Nat's offer. The cash she brought home, the simple luxuries I could treat Grammy and myself to with money like that. I'd get her a flat-screen TV and get rid of the 80s monstrosity in her living room. I'd replace my cheap winter coat that hardly does a thing to create a barrier between the cool air and myself. Maybe even new boots to keep my toes from going numb when the temperature dropped. If I made that much cash, I could finally get Grammy out of the shack she lives in. Chapter 2. Two classes complete, and I'm in dire need of a huge serving of caffeine to get through the rest of the day. There's a little hippie coffee shop a few blocks over that Natalie wants to meet at. I have about an hour and a half before my next class to spare. Walking inside, I spot my best friend immediately, wearing ripped jeans, white Converse, and a peachy pink shirt she's tied into a knot on the left side of her hip. No makeup or jewelry, hair in a messy bun. She's a stark contrast to what she had looked like early this morning. Natalie is already sitting down with two coffees and a muffin that I know is vegan. She's into all that healthy, clean eating shit. I drop my books to the floor and she slides one of the drinks my way. I give her a grateful smile and cup the hot mug in my hands and take a sip. I sigh, making a scene about it. She knows how I love my coffee. "You didn't have to get me your coffee." "Thank you." She rolls her eyes and shrugs it off. "Will you just shush? Honestly, I don't know how you drink it like that, but it's cool." "It's just some sugar," I smirk. I have a terrible sweet tooth. "It's sweetened condensed milk and cream of coconut. Just thinking about it hurts my teeth." "Try it." I hold it out to her, but she shakes her head as if I'm offering up liver and onions. "No, thanks. I'll stick to my lavender cappuccino." She's obsessed with drinking lavender coffee and swears it's helped with her anxiety, but I call bullshit. "Lame," I say, and take a sip. "How are your morning classes?" "They'll be easy breezy. The professor for my law and society class is hot as fuck. I might have to try and bone him," she says, wiggling her brows. "The man is a walking sin, and I'm not exaggerating. He shouldn't be allowed to teach." "Sometimes I think you were a guy in your previous life." "I probably was. I didn't see a ring, not that it matters, but he was wearing a white Henley that I could easily see his tats through. His chest and back are covered in ink." She all but drools. I laugh, hoping she doesn't fall into a puddle at her chair. "Just his chest and back? No sleeves?" Now she has hearts in her eyes. "Both arms, babe," she says. "And he was wearing these slate gray slacks that hugged his fine ass." She mock whimpers. "And his boots. He looked fresh off Fashion Week. If I didn't know the name of the class, I wouldn't be able to tell you what it was about. I couldn't stop staring. I want to do bad things with him." I sip my coffee. "You and all the other girls, too, probably." Her eyes flare and I chuckle. Natalie is competitive. "I'll cut their eyes out with my nails if they look at him." "I bet he's gay," I say, killing her vibe. "Probably is. It's so unfair." She pouts for a moment. "All the hot guys who can dress better than me are always gay and taken. Always. They're scooped up real quick. I need a gay best friend. No strings attached. A guy I can gossip with and shop with and hang out with all the time." "When you find him, tell him it's a package deal because I want one too," I say. "Only because I love you will I do that. You know girls never share when they get one." She smiles. "So?" Her voice trails off. "No," I say immediately and put my coffee down. I know the scheming look in her eyes. "But it's your 21st birthday in 2 weeks and I want to take you out." "I'm sure I have to work." She levels a stare at me. "I know you don't. I already checked your calendar. You have mom duty this weekend, but your birthday weekend is wide open," she announces and smiles. "I'm going to see Grammy." Natalie isn't impressed and gives me a drawl stare. I can't help but laugh again. All we ever do is laugh. "All weekend long? Stop lying. See her during the day and then you're mine that Saturday night. We won't hit the clubs until at least 10. Then you'll have Sunday to recuperate. If you want to spend all day with her, fine, but at night you're mine, and I'm taking you out. And before you say anything else to find a way out of it, I'm paying for everything and dressing you up. She smiles. I groan in protest. Nat, I don't want to. That's too bad. You live in the greatest city in the world, you don't have a boyfriend, and you're turning 21. We're going out, she states firmly, not taking no for an answer. I need a boyfriend. You don't have time for a boyfriend, she counters. True, but after a night of drinking, I'm going to wish I had one. Then hook up with a rando in a bathroom and move on. I tip my cup toward her. Wouldn't be my first time. Not a bad idea. So it's a deal? She asks, and I don't miss the eager tone in her voice. Do I have a choice? No. I lick my lips and look out the window toward the hustle and bustle of the busy street. I glance back at her. Only if I can wear those heels from last night, then I'm game. Her eyes light up. Deal. You can have them if you want. A laugh escapes me and I look out the window again. What do you think she does for a living? I ask, pointing to a bystander on her phone. She's dressed in a business skirt past her knees with a matching blazer. This is a game we came up with. We people watch and try to guess what they do for a living. She's new to the city, or else she wouldn't be looking up at the sign like she's reading a language she doesn't understand. She probably tells people she's in marketing, but she's really a temp. Like a receptionist for a small business that's going to crumble next month, and she doesn't know it. I nod, and she says, Your turn. What about him? She points to a guy in line for coffee. He looks like every other suit in the city. He works on Wall Street and actually has money. He doesn't fake it. How can you tell? His watch is a dead giveaway, I say, looking at what looks to be a Cartier. I saw a blue one in a magazine once that I fell instantly in love with. I never forgot it. Or the $7,000 price tag. You and I both know that suit is not from a corner store or off the rack. It's tailor-made to fit his body and screams wealth. I bet he's terrible in bed. She drags her gaze down the length of his body. He has a nice ass, though. I can always count on her to notice a man's body. I point to a runner. He's a PE teacher for underprivileged kids and loves his job. Come on, a tourist? I ask, unimpressed after she points to someone taking random pictures of the concrete jungle. What about that one? He sleeps with his uncle. Natalie, I laugh and cover my mouth. I look around to see if anyone heard her. One person is staring at us. What? She shrugs and sips her Java like she was only talking about the weather. I bet he bones his cousins, too. You're so bad, I say with a smile. Okay, last one, then I have to head to class. Her eyes scan the throngs of people trying to find the best one. That one. A struggling musician with a killer voice. Oh, and he has a muse who walks around naked. Her eyes light up. Nice. Okay. Text me later. I might have to work tonight, but I'll try to be quiet when I get home. You don't know if you have to work yet? Like you find out at the last minute. That's weird. She doesn't look at me. I think I'll buy you some noise-canceling earphones just in case. But then how will I hear my alarm? She pauses. Good point. Okay, scratch that. I'll just try to be quiet. We hug goodbye and I thank her for my coffee, then we go our separate ways. We might attend Fordham together, but we take completely different classes and our schedules don't usually line up. I'm majoring in developmental sociology and she's still undecided, or so she says. I think that's just to piss her parents off, though. I think she secretly knows, but doesn't want to tell anyone. After a full day of new classes, all I want to do is go through my syllabi and prepare for the semester. Instead, I'm hurrying around my room looking for my uniform because duty calls and my bills need paying. Between crying babies, shitty diapers, and washing and folding strangers' clothes at the laundromat, this education better pay off. Gotta love New York City. It's the only city in the world that can make dreams come true while eating you alive at the same time. Chapter 3. The first couple weeks of school are always so much more exhausting than the rest of the year for me. Adjusting to new classes, homework, and two jobs, I guess it would be tiring for anyone. The stress of life and reality. Welcome to Adulthood 101. As I sit on the bus watching the world pass me by, a feeling of nostalgia settles in my heart. Queens is where I was born and raised, and the only home I've ever known. I may have been all around New York City and Long Island, but that's the extent of my traveling. I've never left the state of New York. I breathe in the familiar neighborhood and take in the exposed brick homes and black wrought iron fences. I don't get to see Grammy as often as I'd like because of my schedule, but when I do, I make the most of it. She's the only family I have left, and I plan to spend all day with her. I know she'll have made my favorite chocolate kiss cookies, and she'll insist on giving me cash for my birthday. She tries every year, and every year I turn around and deposit it right back into her account. Two more stops, and the brakes squeak as the bus pulls to a hard stop just a block away from Grammy's. I can already smell the sweets as I walk up to her little unit, and I smile to myself. Her barred windows are open and jazz music fills the air. One of her many cats is perched on her stoop, and I bend down to pet the furball. She purrs and raises her ass in the air like a little hussy. Grammy? I step over the threshold with ease. This isn't the greatest part of Queens, and the door needs to be locked at all times, yet it never is. Grammy says she grew up never worrying about that, and she isn't going to start now. She's a stubborn woman. My Aubrey! She pulls me into a tight hug. The woman is just over 5 feet and as strong as an ox. I look over her shoulder and see a new creature, one that wasn't here a month ago. I pull back. Gram, did you get another cat? I don't find the cats, they find me. She smiles and I give her a warning look. What? They need food and a warm home. I give it to them. Someone is going to report you. She waves her hand away. They can go bend over. I giggle. My Grammy isn't one to ever curse. Placing my purse on the table, I look around and my brows furrow. How many do you have? I stopped counting. I draw in a deep breath and frown. How does it not smell like kitty litter in here? I have nothing better to do with my life at my age, so I keep my house clean and change litter boxes often. Then I go to bingo. Enough about me. How has school been? How's Natalie doing? I take a seat at the little dinette table and watch as she bustles around the kitchen, wanting to feed me. The cushions are covered in plastic, and the Formica counter is peeling at all the corners. For a woman in her late 70s, she's light on her feet. She attributes it to the cheap red wine and the fact she doesn't have a man in her life. She pays $3 for the bottle and only allows one glass a night. She says it's because her cats need her. I wasn't going to argue with that. Heaven forbid one of them coughs up a furball while she's on a bender. I tell her all about the classes I'm taking, the professors, and of course Natalie, who she loves. Seems like you have your work cut out for you this semester. Think you can handle it? Oh yeah, it's nothing new, really. The classes are a little harder, and I took on an extra one, but I think I'll be fine. Her eyes soften, and I catch a little water in them. Your parents would have been so proud. I know I am. I look down. I miss them more and more every day. Grammy fills me in on all the neighborhood gossip. Who she can't stand, which of their dogs are always shitting on her lawn, who's sleeping with who, and how she's got one person down the street trying to convert her to veganism, and another always preaching about God. She refers to the last two as a Jesus freak and a plant-eating hippie. Her New York accent is so strong that it makes her storytelling animated. She might not have much to do, but she sure has an interesting group of people surrounding her. She places a plate of fresh-baked cookies in front of me. The little thumbprints with the chocolate kiss right in the center smell divine and are my favorite. I pick one up and pop it into my mouth and sigh over the sugary softness. I watch as she reaches under the kitchen sink for a large bottle, then places it on the counter. She retrieves two tumblers and pours us each a drink of the clear liquid. I lean over to sniff when she sets the drink down in front of me. The scent singes my nostrils and burns. I didn't take you for a day drinker, I say. Aubrey, I have waited for this day for years. I chuckle and eye her. To have a drink with me? Yes, you're 21 now. She must have assumed I've never tasted alcohol in my life, which is cute and naive of her. I'm in college, of course I have, but I'll let her believe I haven't. I lean over to smell the contents again, and my face pinches up. What is this?
Sambuca.
Do you just sip this? I ask. I've never had it before. She sits down in front of me and raises her glass and levels a stare at me.
You're going to shoot it.
My brows raise up.
A shot?
Yes, she says, like it's obvious. I glance at the glass.
That's more than a shot. That's like two big shots.
She ignores me and wishes me a happy birthday.
Cheers, my sweet granddaughter.
She taps her glass to mine. Grammy finishes her drink before I even sip mine, and I gawk. Bringing the glass to my lips, I cringe from the smell and shut my mind off, and take the shot, or shots. I'm not sure what she poured me. Goosebumps coat my arms, and I shudder tasting the nasty liquor. It reminds me of black licorice and tastes hot, disgusting. But I smile anyway, like I like it. I don't know how you drink this, I say, as she refills my glass.
That's a good girl, she says, then shoves more cookies in front of me.
It doesn't take long for the alcohol to stream through my veins and make me smile a lot. I turn into a giggly, happy drinker every time. I'm not a huge drinker due to school and work, but I can hold my own. I tell her how Natalie wants to take me out, and Grammy thinks that's generous of her.
I'm glad I got to be the first to get you drunk on your 21st. Now be careful tonight, and don't do anything I wouldn't do, she says.
Before my parents died, I'd heard colorful stories about her that I couldn't make up even if I wanted to. Grammy walks into her bedroom and is back in a handful of seconds, holding an envelope in a box. She hands them both to me. I groan.
Grammy, I told you not to get me anything. Oh, quiet your mouth, she says.
Her eyes glisten, and it makes me feel good to see her so happy.
And I really didn't get you anything. It was your mom's.
I stare at her for a moment as tears well in my eyes. I don't have much to remind me of my parents since I'd been so young when they passed away. Exhaling a breath, I open the box to reveal a rose gold necklace with a charm inside. My finger strums the thin chain and my heart breaks a little bit at seeing it. Grammy leans over and places her chin on her hand.
I remember seeing her wear it, and I asked why in the world she would wear a horseshoe when she'd never even ridden a horse in her life. Actually, she was never in a 10-foot radius of one, now that I think about it. Anyway, she said she didn't know why, she just loved it at first sight. Your dad bought it for her, and she never took it off.
She pauses.
After the car accident, that was one of the few items recovered. Her diamond earrings were missing as well as a watch. They were probably stolen at the scene, but that was still there. I've held on to it ever since.
My chin quivers. Grammy takes the necklace and stands up to place it around my neck.
I read years ago that a horseshoe is supposed to protect from evil and negative energy. If you believe in that sort of thing.
Her voice softens.
She'd want you to have it.
Thank you, I say. My voice just above a whisper. Tears blur my vision, and I quickly wipe the fat drop that slips down my cheek. It's beautiful.
Open the card when you get home,
she says, and I nod. Her phone rings, and she shuffles across the kitchen to pick up the receiver to answer it. I know what's inside the envelope. It's a heartfelt message that will probably make me tear up more and $50. I've saved every card she's given me, and this one will go in my sentimental box, too. A quick glance at the clock on her stove makes me realize it's been hours since I got here. Time always flies when I'm with Grammy.
Yes, Francis, I said I was coming to bingo, so cool your cucumber.
She winks at me. I hear the eagerness in her voice as she talks to her friend while she picks at cookies.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?